Welcome to episode 34 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, Horus, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast that you're listening to. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
And that's pretty much it. It's just us today.
We are flying so low.
Flying duo.
Duo, okay.
On an early Sunday morning.
Who's the captain? Who's the co-pilot?
Let's both be co-pilots.
It's awesome. This ship is going nowhere.
That's right.
So, it's Sunday. It's Easter.
Mm-hmm.
We are here celebrating Easter by podcasting.
Did you get anything in your Easter basket?
Actually, my parents stopped by yesterday on the way out of town to visit my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought me some candy because my mom always likes to do that sort of stuff.
Right.
Even though I'm a little bit old now. And some uncooked steaks.
Nice.
That we grilled last night.
So you got a basket full of raw meat.
We got a basket full of candy with raw meat on top.
Wow.
Fantastic. That's tasty.
I got my wife something, but I got nothing.
Wow.
Probably because I just don't care too much. But you're getting married next month.
I am getting married next month. You weren't supposed to tell anybody.
Oh, you can edit it out if you want.
I don't care. Yes, I'm actually getting married. I've only been engaged for about 5-6 years now.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
Yeah. So it's going to be a War Machine themed wedding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys decide to get the Krios and Fjord on top of the cake or anything?
Yeah, we're going to do something like that.
Maybe Sorsha and Vlad.
And we're going to have a stripper bust out of a warjack.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
There you go.
Actually, I tried to convince Lara to do Thagrash in one of the Legion Warlocks.
Okay,
because Thagrash has to keep his pimp hand strong.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, that didn't work.
Yeah, probably not.
But no, it's going to be a normal wedding.
Okay, but War Machine.
War what?
War Machine or Hordes is a couple games we play, and that's what this podcast is about. So we should probably concentrate on that.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Right. Before we go on, actually, I wanted to mention, apparently, and I haven't checked this, but the Dicon.com site has the weekend registration link open again. So if you actually go there, you can pre-reg for hardcore, put in your name if you want it on the dog tag and all that. So take a look at that, and hopefully you'll be able to register.
Good. Hopefully we can get some more people to sign up.
That's right. We're going to have a hardcore. We need 32 people. Get it on.
Are you going to be hardcore this year?
Yeah, I'll probably play. I'm actually painting my army right now. I've been very, very slowly getting my bone grinders painted over the past week, and it's just taking forever. A little bit at a time. I get called away, I have to come back. It's a pain in the ass.
Oh, I'm working on a few things too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which may or may not make it in time. We'll find out.
Yeah. All right. So that's Dicon coming up in June. What would you like to talk about today, Dave?
I would like to talk about grilling steaks.
Grilling steaks. How about if we talk about some other things.
Okay. Well, I guess we could talk about Mark II some more.
We could do that. I mean, it's been a week mm-hmm. or so, maybe a little less.
Give or take.
So I'm sure we've had observations since then, since we first looked at the rules and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing I can think of was changes in models that I didn't notice on the first go around.
Sure.
There were little things, but you know, like an extra point of armor here and there could really make a difference. I know Tartarus went up one armor. He's 17 now. So it makes him a little beefier.
Yeah.
A little nicer.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, 16 to 17, that's pretty decent. Bile Thralls went down on defense. They're 10 now. Doesn't make him that much harder to kill, but, you know, it's that much worse.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to lose those guys.
Yeah, you want to lose those guys.
No.
Yeah.
Scarlock, I think, went up in armor by one. 14-12 for pistol rates, machine rates, and Scarlocks now. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else. Oh, no, I think the Soul Hunters went up to defense 14.
And they're also like Cav.
They are like Cav, and they all have 5 boxes like all the Cav do.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, little things like that can make a big difference. So, yeah, keep an eye out. They did upload new cards to the fieldtest.privateerpress.com site. I think the only change was the Crow's Cutthroats card that was incomplete, but you might want to download them just to make sure you have a fresh set of cards,
mm-hmm.
as well as the new line of sight and the new formation rules.
Right. Which are changed to be not the fake arcing fire they were before.
Right.
Previously, because you drew line of sight from volume to volume of a model, that meant that taller models could see over smaller models.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that was unintentional.
Yep. Now the volumes are only used if you need to see whether terrain is blocking line of sight.
Yeah, it references drawing lines over bases like it did in the first mm-hmm. version. So that is what is currently the thing to do, I guess. Right.
Well, it's pretty much like Mark One.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, I was kind of liking the fact that you could look over, like, heavy warjacks could see each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, I mean, they always could, but could, like, see over, sub, like, the front rank of smaller models to see
right.
some in the back. But not anymore.
Well, I guess it depends what screening, really. I mean, if it's a small base model, it's intervening, you ignore it anyway.
No, I mean like a large jack looking at a small base model.
Oh, right, because his towering height lets him have a
exactly. Higher
height. Right, yeah, I agree. Yeah, that, I did kind of like that, actually. Although I did, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the line of sight rules, even as they stand now, because to make a melee attack, you need line of sight and melee range, and those are the only two things, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that give everybody, in some cases, ranked attack? Because there's nothing that I read that said you can't attack across another model's base.
If they didn't add that back in, then yeah.
I didn't find it. I could be wrong, so don't take my word for it. But everybody double-check that, because it sounds to me like you might be able to do ranked attack now. I could be wrong, though.
Well, you know, the ranked attack ability now states that a model with it can ignore intervening models in the unit when declaring or when drawing line of sight.
And that still could be a problem if, say, everybody involved is a small-based model. Because then you wouldn't ignore the intervening models.
Well, no, this says you would.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
You ignore your own unit, period.
Right, but let's say you don't have rank. Let's say you don't have that ability, and everybody involved is a small base model. So you're behind a rank of your own models, and there's a small base model on the other side. The lines right now, you still wouldn't be able to attack through the model because you can't draw line of sight. But if it were a medium base model you're attacking, then unless I'm incorrect, you would still be able to attack through your own guy since you can draw line of sight to the medium base.
Sure. What I'm getting is that ranked attack no longer specifies. That you can attack through your friendly model's bases. So since that stipulation
Is
missing, it implies that it isn't a restriction in the first place.
Right. So, yeah.
So it would seem to support what you're saying.
Right. I kind of wish they would have made a list of things that we're used to that aren't in there anymore, like this, if that were the case. So you're not confused whether or not it exists. Like, I'm still confused as to whether or not you can spend focus out of turn, because I haven't seen it written anywhere.
I could have swore I did. I can't remember where
I've seen
now.
Other people say the exact same thing, but I still haven't seen it. And so, you know, it's that weird ambiguity, that's that uncertainty that's throwing me off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I would like to have those things solid. But it's probably a safe bet that you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since most of damage rolls out of turn are boosted already, free strikes and things like that. So you wouldn't have the opportunity to, but attack rolls can still be boosted.
Well, like free strikes are, but defensive strikes and like aren't anymore.
Oh, they're not really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just an additional die, or does it even give you the die?
It's not even an extra die. It's just regular damage roll.
Interesting.
Defensive strike is no +2 to hit and no boosted damage. It's just a free attack, basically.
Does it do a -2 to the mat like it used to?
Nope.
Really? It's a bit of a change, then.
It is. I guess mostly standardized, so it could be put on other models besides the Devout.
True.
Like the Blessing of Vengeance has it as well.
Right.
It used to have I forget what it was called, but basically it had the same thing as defensive strike without the mat penalty.
Right.
So... simplification and standardization.
Mm-hmm. I've been playing with nothing but Epic Asphyxius this week. Played 3 games with him.
Did you?
Same list. So it was a bit boring, but I really wanted to concentrate on one thing so I didn't have a whole lot of variance in what I was playing with, you know. And he's still pretty cool. I found a trick, I guess is the term for it, using Excarnate, his spell. And the idea is that you can chain Bile Thralls upfield before they activate. So typically a Bile Thrall has an 11-inch threat range on its purge. It's 5-inch walk and it's 6-inch purge range. With Excarnate, it allows you to add small-based undead models to a unit. So Bile Thralls were the first thing that popped into my head. And so you can chain them upfield by either putting a guy up front, 7 inches in front of the commander, or you can even go so far as to then kill the commander and promote the new Bile that then extends the formation range, I suppose, upfield a little bit, and then you can add even another Bile Thrall after that. Maybe even more if you had more soul tokens or a Scarlog doing it for you. But the idea is that this really powerful unit, the Bile Thrall, that everybody hated from the beginning, is now a little bit more powerful. And it does cost him quite a bit of focus, but putting that Bile Thrall out there in a good spot and just the precise spot can really devastate your opponent. I don't know, you saw me do it once or twice, I think. What was your impression of that? Was that too powerful? Was that too out of whack?
I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not it's too powerful. It was really, really gross.
It was, yeah.
I mean, well, you basically gave your Bile Thralls an extra 14 inches of threat.
You put them about 8. The threat extends about an extra 8 inches, 7 inches for the formation, and then the width of the small base.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's pretty significant. Well, you chained a couple out though.
On you, I chained it once yesterday. Actually, you know what? In the 3 times I did it, I don't think I ever chained 2. I think I only ended up chaining 1 up, which by itself is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I didn't try to chain 2 up. I couldn't do it against 2 yesterday because I was doing it against Blood Gorgers who had tough, and so half the time I couldn't kill him. But even that one guy out there on you that I did, and even on Mike that I played the next game, it was still pretty powerful because that bile throw that I put out on Mike was the one that ended up killing him on, which was hilarious.
I'm sure Mike appreciated it.
He did.
He really likes Amon and Resnick under the new rules.
Oh, I bet he does. Yeah. Amon went up and he did his Thresher, and he killed both of my machine wraiths in one hit.
Wow, that's nice.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's loving him. I can see why. He's pretty cool now, I think.
Yeah. I played Epic Fiora myself in a list that was a little bit overpointed, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I remember you saying that. How much was it overpointed?
I think it wound up being 3, maybe 4. I wound up dropping the daughters and rearranging the list when I wrote it up, just because it was the easier way to get rid of the points.
Right, right.
But yeah, I played with a fairly solid Warjack core with Epic Fiora. I ran the Redeemer, the Repenter, Revenger, and the Vanquisher. And on top of that, I still had a fair number of solos and units that I could fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up, my 50-point list is actually about 832 points worth.
Wow. Now, did you include your free Warjack points in that army?
Yes.
Because I failed to when I was playing you.
Yeah. Oops.
It turned out I replaced it with a Reaper yesterday. But I'm sorry, you said 832 points?
Yep.
The one I played against you was 700 and... No, I'm sorry. The one that I eventually retooled was 758, I think. So that's pretty big gap. It's like almost 80 points.
Yeah. It's, I'm not sure. Well, you know, abilities change too.
Sure.
It's not the exact same model.
It's not really a conversion from one system to another. That's not really possible, but it still gives you sort of an idea, a little bit of an idea.
Yeah. But yeah, I ran Vilmon and Reclaimer, Vassal, Rax, Choir, Errant, Ion and Holt, and a TFG and Union Attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the new Reclaimer. I mean,
I hate the new Reclaimer.
Isn't he dumb?
Playing against him because he doesn't get rid of his souls.
Exactly.
He's permanent soul storm.
Yeah. Unlike the Warcaster who has to convert his souls to focus, the souls sit on him until he spends them, which means that soul storm stays up until he wants to get rid of it. I mean, there were a couple times where I was feeding souls to Jax's focus, and I just simply chose not to send the last soul over.
Yeah. You only need the one.
Yep. And I had him sitting right behind my TFG, and you couldn't really get in on him with the Bane Knights because they would have
gotten it's toasted. 4 inches from his base, right?
Yep.
So even if you have reach, you still can't get in if he's right there next to a line of troops. Yeah, that was a pain in the ass, let me tell you.
Yeah, that was fun. But, I mean, everything else in my army played pretty much exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything did what it usually did.
Did Fiora play like she typically did?
Yeah, I mean, she didn't change at all. I didn't need to use her magic weapon. The one benefit was Ayana.
Oh, yeah.
Her spell that makes someone magic attacks now affects an entire unit.
That was very handy.
It was. You had 3 machine wraiths coming in at me, and they kind of swarmed around to try and get behind my lines, but my TFG were spread out across the front.
Right.
And she cast it on the TFG, and they just CMA'd and killed all 3 machine race that would turn.
Spread out and in shield wall.
And in shield wall.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. They were basically a big kind of crescent, just kind of touching bases and getting in packed around so they could stab the machine race. They were benefiting from shield wall and throwing out magic attacks, which is really the only non-Mark 1 tactic I used.
There was one other thing you were able to do, and it wasn't really, it was sort of automatic. You didn't need to choose to do it. And that was my damn fires weren't going out.
Oh, there was that. That was actually pretty cool.
That's heinous. That's horrible.
I spent a turn. I used a vassal. I took, I think, 3 shots with my Redeemer and 2 with my Vanquisher because it now causes fire.
Right.
And one of those I boosted and hit because of the whole, you can see kind of down over ranks the incorrect way of doing line of sight that we used to.
Well, the previous way,
I could see. Basically, one of the Bane Knights near the back, and I hit him with the Flame Belcher and boosted, and all of a sudden, your entire unit was on fire.
Well, not only that, you know, there was like a pillar of sorts in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
And I think it was your Vanquisher, maybe your Redeemer. You could draw a line of sight from the edge of your base to the edge of my base, just barely peeking out. Mm-hmm. And so since you could barely see that, you were able to sort of shoot around the pillar in a sense.
That
helped too.
It did. And I hit Epic Asphyxius second, maybe first turn.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hit him directly, but lit him up. And then he got into Fiora's control radius and it didn't go out.
Yep.
He didn't really take much damage, but it was a nice little benefit.
Permanent fire on a caster if you can get within 12. That's terrible, man.
Yeah. Well, most casters probably have the speed or maneuverability to get out if they need to.
Probably, but yeah. That means you may not be in any danger then if they're walking away.
Sure, yeah. It really depends on the caster. I mean, some of them don't care about a pot 12.
True. True.
Like, you know, Karchev doesn't care a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Asphyxius might take a point or two.
He's a 16. It's only four off.
Oh, I thought he was 17.
Yeah, he's, well, because I typically had a focus on him, but when I was taking fire damage, I was just four off the roll. So.
But yeah, most of the Signar and Protector stuff, it would be mean.
I've had the Necrodite, a regular fire that didn't go out because it couldn't roll a one or a two, and that was bad enough.
Yeah. So the fact that she keeps enemy models from going out, but not her own, that's pretty cool. There was a weirdness with her rules, though, which is something we brought up during her feat turn.
Yeah, and this definitely needs to be checked out or reworded or something.
And that is that the Caustic Presence says that continuous effects of the type listed on the affected enemy models in this model's control area do not expire.
Mm-hmm.
For Fiora, that's fire.
Right.
So fire on enemy models does not expire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fiora's feat says, after it talks about getting focus for fires that are in her control radius, mm-hmm. it says, Fiora can then cause fire continuous effects on any number of models in her control area to expire. For each fire continuous effect Fiora causes to expire, select one model in her control area to suffer the fire continuous effect. Well, she already has a rule that says enemy models can't have the effect expire on them, and yet this is telling her to do it. Which one trumps? I think it goes without saying that the intent is that defeat trumps.
I think so.
However, it's not clear. And one thing you pointed out, I mean, Caustic Presence does use the do not terminology as opposed mm-hmm. to cannot. If that even makes a difference, I mean, we don't know.
Right.
It would be something that was nice to have it spelled out and actually cleaned up.
It was a little sloppy. Hopefully, I don't know if you haven't already, but you know, somebody, you or somebody else will type it into the field, the feedback, and hopefully that'll get taken care of. Because little things like that are just, they don't need to be written that way.
Mm-mm.
Still, though, auto fire, permanent fire, that sucks.
It's not as cool as regular Fiora in that she can't light everything up, mm-hmm. but if she does manage to light it up, and Protectorate has enough stuff that can do it.
Sure, especially now with the Reckoner or the Vanquisher, the auto fire?
The Vanquisher's Fire Belcher.
Yep.
Causes auto fire and does fire damage,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. Actually, Fiora is immune to fire damage, and so is the Cleanser, and I think the Castigators.
Mm, that would make sense.
So you could, you know, if the Castigator's up there mixing it up in melee, your Vanquisher could ping him in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't do any damage to him, and it would just get the guys around him.
Right.
But then again, the Castigator already has combustion. Does he, you know, he doesn't need that little assist.
That's true, yeah.
But just the fact that he can.
Right, right.
You know, that kind of stuff. Or, you know, Fiora won't accidentally take damage.
Right.
So, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Some neat tricks. I don't know about you, but I don't feel my faction's really changed in Mark II. I think that models have changed.
Absolutely. I think, and a lot of people are hammering on Crix, and they're saying Crix got screwed. Granted, I've only played Epic Asphyxius in a few games, but I've watched a couple other games, and I just don't see that. I think Crix got a bump in some things. The fact that Biothralls are relatively better now, they didn't change, but since a lot of the things like dropped in armor or whatnot, I think Biothralls are even better now. I think Bane Knight's Vengeance, in a lot of ways, I think it's better than Shadow Shift.
Yeah, we talked about this last week.
I mean, if you can wipe out the unit in one turn, okay, Vengeance isn't going to do anything for me. But if you just kill one guy, that's potentially 9 more attacks I can do for free.
I think the break-even point comes at half the unit. If you've killed mm-hmm. over half the unit, you would have been better taking Shadow Shifts, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't, you're getting more attacks out of Vengeance.
There actually is a difference I noted. Vengeance, I think, says that a model actually has to be destroyed or removed, or maybe it's just destroyed. But either way, if there's a direct hit that doesn't kill the model, Vengeance won't trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to actually take a loss as opposed to a Shadow Shift where you just have to take a direct hit. But still, Vengeance is cool. You know, it's a really clean way of doing it. I'm not wasting your time. I guess I don't even have to take them on my turn if I think I'm going to run out of time in a timed event or something. So I think it's a really clean way to fix, quote, fix Shadow Shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're still, even if you don't want to make the attacks, they're still ghostly. You can still use it to move around freely and get where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bane Knights are fine still.
I think they're perfectly fine. You know, you mentioned Ghostly. Ghost Walk now, which is available to several casters, not just the couple that it was before, gives Ghostly now, which means a Ghost Walk model can charge. Whereas with Ghostwalk, it cannot. So Ghostwalk got better.
We didn't need that.
Yeah, we did. I just think Crix, not necessarily made out like a bandit, but I think Crix is not hurting in Mark II. I think they're just fine.
I mean, maybe it's just me, but it honestly, it feels like a lot of the complaints about the changes are based around the fact that your old tricks don't work.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can understand that everybody needs to learn the new stuff to find the new tricks. And there are some people who only play one or two armies. And if there are one or two armies, the trick that they were built around doesn't work. And I don't mean one or two factions. I mean like one or two actual army builds. Right.
Yeah, because some people, you know, they don't have the money to buy a lot of models. Right. So they do something very specific and that's what they like to play.
Right. And yeah, in that case, those armies might not work anymore or might not be nearly as competitive.
Right.
But on the whole, there's still a lot of manipulation there for much all of the factions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I can't pipe for an extra attack with the Piper, but he still grants Pathfinder, and to some models that need to charge across rough terrain, that's all they need.
And he doesn't have the restriction of doing it every other turn, right? He can do it every turn. So
he could, if he wants to, pretend to be a unit attachment and just follow a unit around.
Yeah.
A little expensive for that, but he could.
So what are your plans for next week, testing?
I don't know yet. That's a good question. I might switch to one of the other Jack casters, either Resnick or Amon. Yeah. Or I might just go back and build a Krios list. Kind of like a build an old school Krios list to see how it basically converts over.
Give your opponent the chance to shake off knockdown and stuff too.
Yeah, see how that works.
It's not a bad plan going back to basics. I would try Denegra, but she hasn't really changed that much. And I don't want to, I don't know, I guess I feel like since she hasn't changed, we know more or less what she can do.
Well, you know, Krios is the same way though.
That's true. Well, actually, Denegra's Feat the Withering, since it affects command, that affects unit formation. And I'm interested to see how that screws people too.
Yeah, that could be really weird.
Yeah.
So far, most people around here have kept their units in roughly Mark 1 formation.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't tried to spread them out as much, so I don't think it's going to be as big of an issue right away.
Right.
But I think as people more realize some of the freedom that Mark 2 allows them with their command, they will, I would say, fall into that trap more or less a little bit more often.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, talking about the freedom, in our game, I had two Bay Knights on one side of the pillar I talked about and two on the other side, and they were well out of 3 inches from each other.
Yeah,
and so my first thought was, oh, crap, they're not in formation. Oh, wait, yes, they are.
Yeah.
So that it was kind of nice. It was kind of weird. It's definitely something to get used to.
Yeah, I was looking at my my Errant that one turn that I had to. I was in melee with Nightmare and also kind of back a little bit because I had to shoot a couple guys. And I was trying to figure out, okay, where can I position? Do I have to chain guys? I need to have line of sight. It's like, wait a minute. No, that's the leader there. I just gotta be with 8 inches. I'm good. No problem.
Right.
And I mean, it is. There are some freedoms there. Now, you can also screw yourself if you basically block in half a unit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to get where you want to go next turn. You're going to have to kind of deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, it almost makes units more like solos because they just have that little bit more flexibility.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, that is the major advantage the solo has. He's not restricted in where he has to need to be on the field, you know, with regards to other models. So, yeah, being able to move almost wherever you want and still being able to make all your techs and whatnot is very important.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't chain Bilethrals back anymore, but you can still have one. What's their command?
There are 7.
So you can have 1 7 inches up above your pack still.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to have everyone within 3.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned chain. There's a thread or two on the main boards in the Mark II discussion section where they're talking about exploiting the current unit formation rules and seeing what fixes need to be made. And with a fearless unit, especially an undead unit, over the course of a couple turns, you can deliberately spread them out across the field. Because at least in the former formation rules, you were not required to regain formation. You just had to move toward or directly toward the unit leader, which means you can move a sliver of an inch and slowly spread the line out. And then with the Bilethral, for example, you can, before they activate, you can cap the leader, move the leader wherever you need to, and then he could be the guy that purges.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's still little tweaks that need to be made to the uniformation rules, but I kind of like the direction they're going right now.
My only complaint is the whole replacing model thing.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Just because position on the board is so important that, you know, somebody who's either careless or manipulative can adjust things when they pull and replace a leader.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are ways to get around that, you know, but it takes extra time. Take a couple models, put a couple tangent lines in there, and then replace the model and so on. Mm-hmm. But that's a real hassle to do every time. I found myself, and I think we did this in our game too, when we knew multiple models in the unit were going to die, we're going to say, okay, this guy's a leader. I'm pointing at him, you know, and then if he dies, okay, this guy's a leader. And after it's all said and done, then you replace him.
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of times, like when I was throwing out some CRA, just doing CRAs in a row, you just waited for them all to die and said, okay, now he's a leader.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
For some units, it might matter.
True.
Because it didn't matter on my turn, mm-hmm. you just waited because it was easier.
Right.
I guess, you know, that's... We talked about Shadow Shift being the time waster.
Right.
In time formats. Someone could, in theory, do that with...
You're right.
With leader replacement.
Oh, let me see. Which guy? No, not him. Oh, yeah.
I can't put him here. That's out of formation. Wow, where do I want to go?
Yeah, and that's a very ubiquitous thing that people have to do, so that'll be interesting. But it'll be easy to catch, I think. Because you could say, you know what, don't bother replacing him now, just wait till I'm done with my attacks.
I would almost have liked it to not get replaced until the control phase or something like that.
People have suggested that. There were a couple of good reasons why not. Had to do with formation again, I think. But that's a suggestion some people have thrown up I've seen on the boards. Mm-hmm. And they might go in that sort of direction in the end.
But I don't know. I just don't like things that can slow down the time format, especially because they want to, you know, they keep pushing that as being the new thing.
Right.
So...
Yeah, we'll see.
So going back to some of the criticisms of Mark II, what do you think about the complaint that spells are bleeding between casters in such a manner that, I guess, kills the flavor of some of them?
Now, specifically, are you talking about between casters in the same faction or even across factions?
I'd say both.
I definitely see it between casters in the same faction, and I'm pretty sure there are some cross-faction spells, but can you think of any off the top of your head?
Sure. Epic Magnus has mobility.
Right.
Which is what Amon has.
Okay. I guess Arcane Bolt was sort of always there with Magnus, but yeah, sort of. This is definitely different.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of instances mm-hmm. of it, but there are a few.
I think it's a casualty of the trying to make things simpler and, you know, just more consistent and well-defined. For a new player, they're not going to see it as much as we will, obviously, because we're just so used to things. And not only this, but spells, completely spells that were just taken away from one faction and given to another.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll notice that more than a new player would. But for me, it bothers me a little bit. I don't mind it so much because, honestly, I like the fluff of the game and the stories, but I don't really read it too much. And I'm a fan of the ideas and the stories, but I don't care too much about how the fluff reflects on the game. So as far as that goes, I don't mind. Even in-game, I don't mind the spells being spread around a little bit, as long as it doesn't go too far. And I don't know where that line would be for me. But for me, right now, I know they haven't crossed that line. Within factions... It's a little bit annoying because, take Occultation, for example. It used to be just on the Coven, you know, give stealth to a model unit. I think Epic Gorshade has it now. And they may be the only two that I can think of in Mark II that have it. But I always thought that as a Coven signature spell. And even though it's a great spell, I would rather them to have kept that, I think. It makes Epic Gorshade a little bit better, but that disappoints me a little.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm happy by it.
Really?
Yeah, Severius lost Holy Vigil and gained Protection Minoth.
Mm-hmm.
That's a boost. That's an improvement of Severius.
Does Kreas still have protection?
He does. Resnick lost Hatemonger, which is his flying steel strength boost.
Right.
And gained Engine of Destruction, which is a speed, strength, and mat boost. His mat is 11 when he cast that.
Did Fiora lose that?
No.
Okay, Fiora has still it too. So, there, yeah, definite bleed there. Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's some increases. It's boosts to the models. It makes them better. And, yeah, the names are the same as, you know, the other person's spells, but...
Mm-hmm.
It's to me, a spell was never fluff-wise something that only one person knew how to do. The fact that Immolation was on 90% of my casters
mm-hmm.
told me that somewhere the warcasters are sitting in their you know, cafeteria sharing their spells around the table over their, you know, whatever the hell they're eating there in Protectorate Land.
Big bowls of Menos Fire.
Sure, yeah.
I agree that it definitely makes them more powerful, and things like Engine of Destruction, why wouldn't you want that on your caster? Part of the reason for me, and is that a lot of the Crix casters lost spell numbers, just sheer number of spells.
Ones.
Huh?
So the protector
right.
ones.
Right. I figured that was the case across the board. And so the fact that there's that much copy-pasting, I guess, and the fact that I lost other spells, I guess it makes it seem to me like there's just not as much variety as there was. And so you were talking about flavor earlier, and that's what makes, in my mind, them lose a little bit of flavor. They're still unique, granted, but with the loss of abilities and with the bleed of spells, that makes them a little more watered down to me. I still love them, still think they have character, but they're just a little bit more watered down in my eyes.
The way I see it, when spells are shared across models, it means that, how do I put this? It makes your tricks not specific to a warcaster.
True.
If you come up with a neat trick you can do with one warcaster with a signature spell,
mm-hmm.
Now you can actually use that in other armies. It allows kind of you to reappropriate that trick and use it elsewhere. But for me, I mean, the uniqueness of the warcaster is in its combinations of spells and its feet more than anything else in my mind. And since none of them have all of that shared, I still see distinct lines between all the warcasters.
I still see distinct lines, but I just don't know where the line is going to be for me personally when they cross it. Hopefully they never will.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that they're not going to give, you know, every caster this, you know, 50% of the same spells. I don't think they're ever going to go any that far. That would be a little silly. But I guess just spells that I think of as belonging to a caster having blood over, like occultation, makes it a little less unique. You know, Ghost Walk was always shared between a couple, so if they give that to somebody else, that's not going to bother you so much. Same thing with Immolation in my eyes. But, you know.
Yeah. Personally, it's a simplification that they're going for. I understand why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Play-wise, it doesn't bother me. I can see people kind of being up in arms because they perceive a loss in individuality, but a warcaster is so much more than just one or two spells that it doesn't hit me. So I don't know. I just figured that was it. I found that to be an interesting complaint I've seen on the big boards, and I was curious what your opinion of was.
Yeah, it's not a big deal to me, but it's something that's on my mind, or it's in the back of my mind, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So no big deal. And who knows how this is going to end up anyway when we see these for reals in January.
Sure.
So.
I guess we're kind of talking about it now. You've mentioned you're aware of the fluff, but you don't follow closely.
Mm-hmm.
Would you much rather have a solid game on the table than have something that's fluffily distinct?
A solid game, you mean just well-written, well-designed? Or
yeah, and definitely. Like the rules all
yeah,
work.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really easy in something like a role-playing game or even a co-op game like Arkham Horror to concentrate on the story.
Mm-hmm.
But in a game like War Machine, which is designed to be competitive, there are two people who are trying to defeat each other.
Mm-hmm.
The rules are the only thing governing their interaction.
Right.
You can't, like in a role-playing game, make up descriptive whatever. You know, I don't even know how to phrase it. You can't go outside the rules
mm-hmm.
to achieve your goal.
Well, you could in a war game, you just don't expect it to affect the game.
Right, yeah.
If Resnick charges at Nemo and swings it, sure. You know, whatever, but that's not going to affect the dice you roll.
Right.
Or if it doesn't, something's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would rather have a solid, unbiased set of rules mm-hmm. determine the game's outcome than have every caster being absolutely unique.
Well, I think you could... Wait, say that again?
I would rather have, like, the unbiased rules.
Right.
You know, just fairly kind of arbitrate the match, more or less.
Right, right.
Than to put too much weight behind making each caster feel different and all that.
Well, I think you can still have very unique characters and still have a solid rule set. Now, in some cases, it may be easier to make them not as unique, but I think you can still do that.
I think that you can. But I think mm-hmm. it comes down to the human nature of game designers.
Mm-hmm.
As you start trying to make all the casters unique, as you try to add something little to each one to make it completely separate,
mm-hmm.
you introduce more chances for human error in the balancing side of things.
Sure, yeah, I can see that.
And that, I guess that's more of the perspective I'm coming from.
Sure.
By taking a little bit of the individuality away and making some bleed between casters, mm-hmm. I mean, you basically, you're a math guy. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a math guy.
Sure.
You have to have a number of equations equal to the number of variables to solve a system of
yeah, they have to be independent functions. Equations.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, you're eliminating variables
right.
in the whole equation of balance.
Right. I think we just lost half the listeners right there.
Yeah.
So, but what I was going to say is, I think we were agreeing to one level or another that the warcasters and, well, even all the characters in units, they're still unique even now today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I don't think we're saying that they lost.
Oh, no, not at all.
But I see what you're saying to an extent. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying that I would rather there be less variables and trying to balance the casters.
True. But of course, there's a lion again.
Right. I don't want eight Kriosses.
Right.
I love Krios, but I don't want to have eight of them.
Right, right. Well, you don't want to have two of them.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, I don't think I do. I think I have
I agree.
A number of distinct casters.
Yeah.
So, but I'm special, and it's my opinion that matters, damn it.
Really? You're special just like everybody else?
Just yeah, exactly.
So, after the first week, my opinion is that Mark II is it's pretty solid. Needs some tweaks, granted, and it will need tweaks even after it's out.
Oh, sure.
But I think it's well on its way to being a success.
That's the thing. Just like any game system, you know there's going to be a rattle released.
Yeah.
And that's the naysayers are just going to sit there and harp
yep.
and complain. And I would be complaining if they didn't fix stuff.
As long as something needed to be fixed,
yeah.
Sure.
That's the...
It's the nature of systems. Yeah. It's not going to be perfect.
It's the downside of having so many players
right.
as War Machine has. Somebody's going to find something that's wrong. And Privateer Press has two options. Ignore it or fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Which would you rather them do?
Or at least comment on the fact that somebody thinks that something needs to be fixed. You know?
Yeah.
And they're always good about that. They always have a good face to the customer. Even if they're not going to do anything, they say, well, or at least they attempt to say, here's what we think, here's what we're going to do or not do.
Right.
And you can't really expect too much more. They're not going to cater to every person's little whim.
Mm-hmm.
So we played our game the other day, Dave.
Yeah, we played Wednesday.
Yes, we did. What did you bring to the table?
I brought Epic Fiora, mm-hmm. a Hierophant, a Redeemer, a Repenter, a Revenger, and a Vanquisher, because I had at least one Jack that didn't start with an R.
Oh, yeah, you have to have that.
Yeah, it's the gimme.
Sure.
Then I had Vilmon, another V. See how I'm doing that there?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's clever.
There you go.
The Reclaimer, the Vassal, a Trio of Rax, the Choir, Full Errant, Ion and Holt, Full Flame Guard, and their unit attachment.
How do you like those racks being not immovable anymore?
It only really matters if you have a Jack with an open fist.
Can you slam them still?
You can, but it was never set up for me to do so.
Sure, they're so far back.
Yeah, the limitation on advanced deployment really kind of hoses that.
Yeah.
You really need the throw to get it anywhere.
It's still kind of funny, though.
It is. They are now javelins.
Yeah.
But that was my list. It was pretty... pretty straightforward. I kind of kept the TFG moving up the center of the field with the Reclaimer right behind him and Ion and Holt.
Mm-hmm.
The Errant went up one flank, and I had the solos kind of actually on the edge of the TFG mostly.
Yeah, yeah, you had Vilmon running around the far side.
And Fiora pushed up field hard and was trying to get to Asphyxius.
And you had the Daughters on your right flank?
I had the Daughters on my right flank before
you
I realized.
Took them out. That's
right. Yeah, the list was overpointed. So when I tried to redesign it to kind of bring up here, it was, they went out and I adjusted a couple of things.
Cool.
Yes. There's only one or two points over, but that's actually a big deal, Mark II.
I guess it is. Yeah, really. It's an extra couple solos. Yeah.
What did you bring?
I brought Lich Lord Asphyxius. That's Epic Asphyxius. He brought Nightmare, Reaper, two Death Rippers, a Night Rich, Bane Lord Tartarus, two Machine Wraiths, 9 Scrap Thralls, full unit of Bane Knights, full unit of Bile Thralls. And like you, I had to retool my list because I inconveniently forgot to add in my free Jack points. So that meant that I added in a Reaper and took out a Machine Wraith.
Wait, Josh. Scrap Thralls with no Necrotech?
I know. 9
How do you
scrap
do that?
Because they're solos now and you do not need to take a Necrotech. Although when you take a Necrotech, you get a free Scrap Thrall because that's how the blister comes when you buy the models. So, but yeah, they're awesome now. They run without blowing up and they get to charge and all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah, I did have my... Daughters that charged a Bone Jack at one point,
because mm-hmm.
luckily they still have acrobatics.
They do.
And then you basically had a Scrap Thrall turn around, give them all a big hug.
Yep, I damaged my own Jack, but yeah, 4-inch POW 8 can kill a lot of stuff in
it
some
can.
Cases. So.
It's what, Forsaken or 4?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although they're a little tricky to use because, you know, 4-inch AOE, they blow up. If they blow up, they'll probably blow up another Scrap Thrall next to them, which, you know, can set up a weird chain. So you could lose a lot of models by putting them in weird places. So.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you had them close enough that I could fire off something like that. But the few times that it happened, I didn't roll high enough in the POW 8s to kill the next Scrap Thrall.
Well, not to get too far off this topic, but I was playing Stu yesterday, same army. He also had Krix, and he also had a Scrap Thrall. I had a trio of Scrap Thralls in one part, and he ran his Scrap Thrall right in the middle of them. So all four of those were just basically going to die. I had to do a free strike or something else. So
nice.
They're all gone. So yeah. But so my formations on the table, I guess, the Scrap Thrall sort of led the way, mostly on the left, I think. On the right, I had Nightmare, who I think he was praying Fiora the whole time.
No, he was praying the Daughters.
Oh, he was. Game. Oh, that's right. And then once they were gone, I guess I put it on Fiora.
You
I
did.
Can't remember. So those guys were on the right. I think I had a Death Ripper on the right. Reaper wasn't there, of course. Tartarus, he was over on the right. He was talking to the Errants. He Threshered at one point, and since it's one roll, that one roll, if you miss it, could be bad. And
you
I
rolled an 11.
And I needed a 12, yeah.
You needed 12.
Or a total of 12.
Right.
So that was kind of funny. I kind of like how Thresher is now.
Yeah.
It's all or nothing, sure, but it's still kind of cool.
It's much faster.
It is. It is, absolutely.
It's even better on Jacks and Warcasters now.
Oh, goodness, yeah. Especially if you're on a larger base and you have mm-hmm. Reach, so it's horrendous. My 3 Machine Wraiths, which should have been 2, were around your TFG, and like you said earlier, or at one point they engaged your TFG, and you just killed them with your Ionic magic attacks. The Bane Knights sort of held off the TFG for a while. I used Vengeance once. It was kind of neat. And the Bile Thralls took care of half the errants, and I used the Excarnate thing to add another Bile to kill your errants. So,
you killed most of them. There were four left at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Nightmare just tried to hold off the TFG, or the errants as best as he could, and I think he took a swipe at Fiora, but she had 29 armor at the time.
Yeah.
So that was a little difficult to get through, even though he comboed strike, pile 22. Sweet. So it was just a game of a little cat and mouse trying to pick each other off here and there until you got, a charge lane off by using Flame Step. Is that what it was?
Fire Step. Yeah, I would say the game, roughly from my perspective, was there on the left, the TFG kind of up the middle, and the Solo's off to the left a little bit as well. And the TFG's kind of held the center with the Reclaimer behind him, because as soon as one died, Soul Storm was all I really worried about. The Vassal spent most of his time letting the Redeemer spread fire around. That's how I got it on your caster. And I lit, I think all your Jacks on fire except the one Bone Jack on the far right flank.
I
even got Tartarus.
Yes, you did.
So, I mean, it was spread out there pretty good. It came down to, I think, turn two or three when everything was in the middle of the table, when I used the Vanquisher a couple times and set stuff on fire. Had a Paladin use Stone and Mortar and move way upfield. And then Fiora charged him in the back and missed.
Yeah.
Because of that awesome defense on him. Right. Didn't boost. Feated and pulled back 10 focus. I didn't move any around because I'm not sure the rules say I can.
Right.
But I did get your caster in my control area. And I did the math. I was just close enough that I could fire step and start throwing immolations at you. But I didn't think that I had quite enough focus to finish the job, so I just camped on it.
Right.
And then the next turn, you moved Asphyxius to the far flank and swarmed Bane Knights around. I think
I used Teleport that turn to get him over a little farther.
And I managed to clear a hole that I could fire step to and then charge him.
Yep.
And with the, I think I rolled 17 for on one of my damage rolls. It was boosted.
It was pretty cool.
It was pretty dumb. I realized at that point, well, crap, Epic Fiora doesn't have Slaughter anymore.
Oh,
which is kind of disappointing.
Right.
But she didn't need it that time. She did all right.
Then again,
you were a heavy jack under, and I was a couple points over. So I don't think it was a fair measure of skill.
Well, I mean, it was still pretty close at the end. You had a focus left over that you could have bought, but I think you needed an 8 to hit or something. So
yeah,
it was pretty close. I was so close to killing your Reclaimer, so I could get in there and get your TFG, but I missed with an Excarnator. I didn't damage him enough.
Yeah,
or something. That was annoying. But
you hit one of the TFG and didn't kill him.
Right.
And then you said, well, forget that. I'm going to go for lower defense, armor Reclaimer. And you actually missed him.
Yeah.
And yeah, that kind of stopped.
Three focus spell, and I'm sure I boosted. So that was a little annoying, but
yeah.
So it was a fun game, though. It was the first foray into Mark II, so it was a good learning experience.
Yeah, and we made a couple, mistakes with units. We'll kind of go back to Mark II a little bit here, and it brings up one really interesting thing about unit attachments. I mean, it's no big deal to lead with your unit leader in the front now for non-character units, because they can just promote.
Right.
But you can't get an officer back. So, if I want my preceptor in front to give me the biggest charge flexibility, if he goes down, I lose his granted abilities.
I think, and I haven't had a chance to look at it really closely, I think with the new line of sight rules, I think they remove the statement that you always must... If you start in formation, I think they removed the statement that said you must be always in formation. I think now you check at the beginning and the end of movement.
That's how I thought it always was.
The original rules say when a trooper moves, it must always remain in command or something like that in formation. Let me see if I find it.
Well, I'm referring more to the fact that if you don't have your officer up front, you can't get as far ahead of him. Oh, are you saying now you can charge away from him?
Yes, yes. I believe that's the way it is now.
Okay.
I think they removed that restriction. So it's a lot closer to what we have now.
Do you know where that would be?
Let me see here. Do you have the new rule, the Luna site? Well, in the new document, they just said replace this section with this section. They didn't actually spell out what they were getting rid of. So you have to kind of look at both documents.
Oh, it's very short.
Yeah. The previous one said... Let's see, they kept the first sentence, when a unit makes its normal movement, troopers can move in any order. And then they got rid of the second sentence, when a trooper other than a unit commander advances at any time, it must remain in formation. That's no longer the case.
Okay.
So you can charge out.
So you
still have to start in formation, but you're good as
long as you start. Interesting. Well, I thought that was kind of an interesting dichotomy.
I thought
you
it
could
was
grant
too.
Abilities to a unit, but it kind of it was a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're taking that out so that it's back to you can lead from the back.
Yep. Which is great for commanders or officers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I guess when you think about it, it's probably better like that. As much as it added a tactical element to the game that I mm-hmm. think was beneficial,
mm-hmm.
for a unit like Sam McCorn or Boomhauer or even, you know, Jovaya in the Honor Guard,
mm-hmm.
it meant you had to lead from the front. For those non-replaceable guys.
Right. Well, it also does something else. Let's say you have a unit with a very small command, like Mechanothralls with a command of 6. That means this allows you a little more maneuverability, a little more flexibility in where your guys can charge.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really restricted to that 6. And sure,
so they can still charge out of formation if they need to.
Well, they still need to end up in formation because if you're out of formation, you can't make attacks.
Okay.
So it's not that big of a change for small command armies, but I think it still gives you a little bit of flexibility. But you're absolutely right. With a unit with an officer, they need to lead from the back, and mm-hmm. this definitely lets them do that.
It's interesting. I'm kind of torn about it, but I can understand. Yeah, I'm torn from a perspective of I don't field a lot of character units,
mm-hmm.
and you know, but I guess going forward, I can see. From the other factions' perspectives, how it makes a big deal.
It'd be huge for mercs.
Oh, yeah.
So.
But, yeah.
It's kind of funny, I guess, and I can't point to too many things other than this. It seems like in Mark II, they made some radical changes, and then they're slowly trying to see what they can sift out and move back toward Mark I, but they still want to make a little bit of progress, so to speak.
I'm actually kind of curious how much of it is they're moving back towards Mark I and how much is they didn't catch it the first time around.
Definitely a combination of both, like the line of sight rules. We definitely know. I mean, I think it was DC who said, oops, that should have been caught. He didn't use those exact words, but that was the gist I got. But yeah, it seems like it's the syndrome where you get, you know, you write yourself an essay or thesis, and if you're the only one who looks at it, you don't see the holes.
Right.
So you need fresh eyes, which is what they're doing now, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have given me a little more confidence, I guess, if they would have caught things like the line of sight thing.
Yeah. You know? But yeah.
They're human, hey.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. We can't, you know, complain too loudly.
They're human, unlike us.
Right, yes. I'm the pusher robot. I think we already did that joke in one episode.
I think so. It was a while back, so, you know, the...
Terrible secret space.
Statute of what? Oh, right. You know, the statute of limitations is off on it now.
So awesome.
You can do it again.
What other old jokes can I call back? I guess we're just not that funny.
Yeah,
I can't think of any.
Yeah.
Wait, well, I went over how my game worked. You know, mm-hmm. basically it was, I talked about before, I never feat a lot with Fiora, but mm-hmm. this time I went ahead and tried to push her upfield. I want to see how far upfield I could get her. Feated, you know, charged, got way upfield. The downside is when you do that, it feels dirty because like, ooh, I can feat, I can get a lot of focus, and it's gone before my next turn.
Yeah.
At least, you know, at least you're protected, but that's, you know, that's really all it got me in that turn.
Right.
What about you? I mean, what were you going for? What was your strategy?
I was playing a little.
I saw your strategy was abuse your stupid teleporting bile thralls.
That was the idea, and so I was torn between trying to see if this was really a bad combo or, you know, good combo, and just trying to play the game and see what Epic Asphyxius was about. I guess I played a little too tentatively, which wasn't necessarily bad because you had so much range stuff that you could just pick him off if you really needed to. But in all three games I played this week, I never feated with him once. His feat is more or less like it used to be in Mark I, but so I never even got the chance to really do that. I didn't really have a good reason to do it, though. I did win two of the three games I played. They were all really close, though. Every single game was, one way or another. So I just don't see a whole lot of changes between regular Asphyxius or Epic Asphyxius in Mark I and in Mark II. Definite rules changes.
Sure.
But the tricks that he can pull, like putting out multiple caustic mists, for example, that eats up a lot of his focus.
Yeah.
So my guess on Epic Asphyxius is when you play him, he's going to be out of focus by the end of the turn. He might have one left because it seems like the cost of his spells tend to get him one left. I think that's the way he's going to be, which means you're going to use Soul Reaper to get souls to help boost him for the next turn and so on, pretty much like he is now. But I think he exhausts his resources every turn to do as much damage as he can,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense. That sort of fits fluff-wise, too. You know, he's devious. He, you know, does whatever he can. I don't know. I didn't really have a solid game plan when I was going against you. I was sort of like, wow, this is all new to me. What am I doing?
Yeah.
So, again, the Bile Thrall Purge thing was what I was really trying to get off. And, it was harder to get off than I thought it was. Although I think in some cases it's going to be incredibly easy to get off. So, and I really wanted to see Vengeance go off on the Bane Knights one or two times. Only went off once, but with that stupid Soulstorm there, it was difficult to actually
use. Well, I think I think one of the things that kind of prevented the X-Carnate trick, which you really wanted to do, which was a byproduct of just the list I happened to bring, which was, right. again, Errant's on the left, and their new bond of life is basically if a model is disabled, I pick someone else to be destroyed, which prevents you from mm-hmm. doing the destroying. Which right. prevents,
that's why I had to pick on the daughters exactly. instead. I saw those Errant's.
Which had stealth.
Right.
Which meant you had to get your bone jack way up there. Mm-hmm.
Which typically isn't too much of a problem. They're sort of expendable anyway.
Right.
But I didn't want to
You only
die.
Had two, though.
I had three. I had two death.
Did you?
Two death representatives.
That's right. You had one that kind of hung back in the left line.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. I did have to sack that Night Wretch to, you know, to get to the daughters.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it worked. You killed one or two and threw out some more mm-hmm. Bile Thralls.
And I was able to actually get souls for them with Soul Reaper.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it wasn't as easy as it would have been if I had something like the new Idrians.
Mm-hmm.
Or a unit that wasn't advanced to play, you know, something with a little lower defense.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think of your list overall?
It was all right. I'm thinking that Scrap Thralls, not necessarily a must take, but boy, if you have a couple points left over, just take six Scrap Thralls. They're so cool. They're so versatile now, more so than they were before, that they can lead the army instead of coming up from behind like they mm-hmm. can now, or like they can in Mark One. So Scrap Thralls, I like them.
Could you see spreading a couple out and running them up flanks to kind of come around behind your opponent?
Yeah, I did that in about half the games I played this week, and about the other half I kind of bunched them up into one solid army mm-hmm. or, you know, thing. Not close enough to destroy each other, but, you know. They're just so versatile. Running 10, it's pretty decent. Things are scared to get next to them if they're low armor, so sometimes they don't even have to worry about getting charged or anything. So they're kind of a controlling element as well, kind of pushing things to the center, to the side, or whatever. The Machine Wraiths, I only had one chance to use one, and then it turned out that he was next to Nightmare, which is a character jack, which they can't take over. So, but I think with the ubiquitousness of jacks now in Mark II, mm-hmm. I think Machine Wraiths are going to be that much greater. I'm glad I have three.
You know, I was kind of worried about the fact that I had four jacks when your Machine Wraiths were yeah. coming at me.
And I think that's something a Crix player can count on now. They're going to see at least a couple jacks, probably much more than that sure. on the other side most of the time. I didn't think about Ayana giving the entire unit magic attacks.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I saw you know, you start swarming around like, okay, that one's on the left edge of my TFG. That one's right in front. This works whole unit. Yes, excellent.
But the thing was, in your particular army, I couldn't put him on the other flank either because the knights had blessed weapons still.
Only on the crossbows, but yes.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing I asked him, like, wait a minute, this guy's had blessed weapons, yes. And they're going to the left.
Yes. Yeah.
Didn't matter because Ayana was right there. So, yeah. Lesson learned. Tartarus.
Ayana's not as cool with harm anymore, but mm-hmm. I think she's now more utilitarian. Instead of being the death platform with mm-hmm. harm and holds guns, she's the support platform. She can make stuff magic
mm-hmm.
Or do the whole stealth thing, and yep. Holt can still shoot.
Sure.
And two power 12s is nothing to shake a stick at.
And his rat is 8 or something
yeah.
like that. So not guaranteed hits, but pretty decent.
To make a hole for Fiora to charge, he capped a couple of Scrap Thralls, one which ran right in front of Asphyxis. You put it over there beforehand. Before you realize you're going to move Asphyxius.
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah.
So it's like, all right, I'm going to shoot the one in front of Asphyxius. He did no damage to him in the blast, right. But it was just funny.
Yeah. So overall, it was a good time.
I said this before. I enjoyed the game as much as Mark One.
Mm-hmm.
My army felt the same as Mark One, and, I mean, there's going to be some growing pains as we learn the new system and, mm-hmm. and how to stretch it to its max, but I got no problems.
I agree. They've created room, and they're in the process of creating room for, you know, a little bit of expansion, hopefully not, you know, rules bloat was part of the problem that they were fixing here.
Absolutely.
Let's hope that they're wise enough not to create that problem
sure.
again or make the expansion so slow that it's, mm-hmm. you know, it'll take them 8 years to make a Mark III if they need to or something. But I have high hopes for it.
And that's not to say that we think the system's perfect.
No, sure.
I mean, we've already pointed out some of the issues we saw in just a couple games.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's an improvement.
I think so as well. Still fun. Like you said, armies still feel the same. Again, I've only seen Crix and Protectorate. All three games this week involved those two factions. Even if I don't get to play this week, I might just deliberately watch people play Kato or Signar. I'm mm-hmm. really interested in seeing how those guys turn out.
Yeah. I'm kind of worried about Signar. They look like they get some mean stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, before their big drawback was that they're more expensive, but they're not so much anymore.
Right, right.
So we'll see how that works. Did you decide whether or not you wanted to try Denegra next week?
If I tried Denegra, it'd probably be Epic Denegra because she actually did have some significant changes. Mm-hmm. I actually might just use her. That'll be my plan. I was toying between her and Terminus. just by looking at them. And I don't want to sound like one of these naysayers you'll see on the forums, but I don't think I like Terminus right now. His feat is cool. Mm-hmm. It lost some of the important things that now would really matter with all the jacks on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Mark 1, he prevents focus being allocated.
Sure.
I do like the fact that he gets armor for souls, but he takes free strikes when he flies over models now.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting to see what happens to Legion.
My first thought was, well, he's kind of like Thagrosh with hubris. He doesn't want to go away from guys now because he doesn't want to get hit. But we'll see. I'm sure he's a lot better than I think he is. My first blush, though, was like, eh, he got nerfed.
I haven't decided. There's so much new stuff that I haven't either played in a while or I want to try. And I want to make sure I can hit some of the other factions. I might go with a Exemplar army
and just
build like the Exemplar theme.
Right.
And or I might do Amon or Resnik and do Jax.
One thing that had just occurred to me, I've been wanting to use Stalkers more now that Mark II came out. But a lot of their abilities are Horde-centric with their Eviscerators, you know, removing Tough, which of course is on some War Machine things too, but, you know, preventing transfers and things like that. I'd like to see how that works out with Hordes, but that's not possible right now. Not really.
Yeah. I'd almost say play a Mark 1 versus Mark 2 game.
And just swap the abilities?
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to play your army using the Mark 2 rules versus, for example, my Horde's army using Mark 1 just to see what would happen.
Use the Mark 1 points, but use the Mark 2 stats?
No, because there is no for Hordes. Oh, you mean
just for the War Machine
stuff. We'd probably have to do something like if we did, like, I would build a 750 army and you would build a 50-point army.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Because it's kind of the equivalent nowadays.
Sort of. I mean,
you can't use Mark 1 points with your Mark 2 stats because they don't correspond anymore.
Well, I know, but I mean, you have to do something,
sure.
Of course. But, you know, what you just said kind of made me think. My army I played against you was 758, yours was 832.
Yeah.
I've seen even bigger differences between people's things. So, you know, we're talking about the conversion. It's the closest thing we have, but it's still by no means exact.
Right. But again, I mean, let's look at what changed for me in my list. Why is it so different? I can point it out really quickly. It's a Knight's Errant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they used to cost 79 plus, I think, 13 each. It's 131. 131 points for 10 Errant in Mark 1.
Really?
In Mark 2, it's 8.
I didn't realize they were that expensive in Mark.
Oh, yeah. That's why they almost never saw play. They were an Idrian point level, and which would you rather have, Idrians or Errants?
Sure. And an 8 for a full man unit is pretty much standard for Mark II, it seems.
Right. It basically became a standard cost unit, which I think is great. It fits what they did.
Oh, sure. Yeah. For mine, though, actually, I've made multiple Mark II armies, 50-point armies, and I'll only play the one, but they've all turned out to be almost 750, give or take like 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if that's just a quirk with the Crick's pointage.
Do you think it's a quirk with the Crick pointage, or do you think it's a quirk with your army build preferences?
Could be. It could be. You know, there are a lot of models that I just don't use. And I guess the armies I did make, I did use models that I tend to use now. So I wonder if I start the one in Stalkers or lots of Mechanicals,
yeah,
which I don't really use now.
Stalkers are dirt cheap.
Yeah, they're 64 in Mark 1, 3 in Mark 2.
You mentioned Mechanithralls, and you mentioned earlier they're a smaller command.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see running them as two units of 6 as opposed to a full 10?
Could be. I mean, they do die as easily as they did before, maybe easier now. But
I think
given
the second,
restrictions.
Having the second leader on the table to give them more flexibility?
Yeah, possibly.
And positioning?
Yeah. I was never really good with Mechanithralls in the first place, but I definitely might try them out now. I got rid of a unit last year.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of regret that now. Well, that's not true. I got a second unit of druids for him.
Good trade.
6 for 6, yeah. So, yeah, that's a good point. I'll see if I can add in things that I typically don't use and see if the point level still turn out to be about 750 for a 50-point game.
Right.
That's another thing. I've only played 50-point games. I haven't tried, like, the 15 or the 25 to see how that really works out.
Yeah, well, the 15 and 25 is basically battle box.
Yeah, they're the duels, I think,
so,
is what they're listed as.
I might play one or two, but I'm not really interested in it,
because
most of the time I play with both infantry and jacks.
Right.
And that's where most of the game's going to get played. I mean, I think it is important to test a lower point total just to make sure that it's not broken.
Right.
But other than that, we'll see.
Yep.
It's also going to depend on what people want to play when we show up in the on Wednesdays.
True.
But I actually think I might build some 50s and a couple 35 armies, too, just so I have some choices there.
Yeah, right now, I guess it would be great for people to test out the multi-Warcaster games. That's not something that I really like to do too much, so I probably won't be testing that. So I hope other people out there are really testing the combos between multiple Warcasters. I haven't seen anybody do it around here yet.
Yeah, it's just But especially that, how much stuff you can put on the table now. That's just so much stuff.
Yep. That's another thing. We've been talking about point conversions. I haven't done like a count of number of models. Did you happen to do that on yours?
The counter models are the same.
Oh, I meant take your average 750 list and your average 50 point list and compare those. That's what I meant.
I see.
And I have no idea how that would really compare.
It's going to be lower because I'm fielding more jacks.
I guess so. Much. That's true.
Probably not as lower because I still will throw in other stuff. But I mean, the thing about the protector now is that their jacks are still decent, relatively solid.
Mm-hmm.
Choir is harder to use. They're not as good anymore.
Yeah, what do you think about that? I hear people talking about how they're still good, but they're weird to use because you just put them in different formations.
They got nerfed pretty hard.
Think so.
And the big deal is because they have to stay within 3 inches of a jack, but they can't run and do their hymns.
Right.
It's really easy for jacks to get ahead of them.
Their speed went up by one. They're sixes now. Mm-hmm. Is that right? That helps a little.
Yeah, but if a jack's running, it still outpaces. A jack that runs will outpace their singing range by an inch still.
Right, that's true.
Unless it's a heavy, it only was four. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they have to be within 3 inches means they have to be up closer. They have to be out by the jacks. They were much easier to use in Mark I when it was just 8-inch circle.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still good. They're very cheap still.
How much does a
three cost? Three for six. It's 2 points for four if you want a minimum.
Right.
But that with the Vassal and the Reclaimer, or two of each, if you want, especially with a Jack Caster,
right,
is really useful. And all our solos are pretty useful now. So, you know, we still have some decent infantry, but our strengths kind of shifted a little bit.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to rewrap my head around that.
Do you feel like we're being sold the same game twice?
No, because I already bought all my stuff.
Well, other than having to buy new cards and possibly books.
Being sold. No, because it's not like they sold me Prime and I couldn't use it.
So you feel like you got a worth out of the book?
Yeah. I mean, now granted, we play every week. Maybe if someone only plays once a month at that, they're going to feel like Prime Remix just came out to them, maybe.
Right.
But, I mean, these books have been out for a while. Even Legends, we still had a lot of time to consume its content.
Well, by the time Mark II comes around, we'll have had a year and 5 months or something like a year and 4 months.
That's relatively significant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like all the Mark I stuff is dead as of now.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
We're not even getting real Mark II stuff until next year.
Right. Right now, it feels like Mark I isn't even there anymore for me. And it won't until May.
Yeah. So, not really. I don't feel that way at all.
Really? Granted, the models have already been bought. I don't like the idea of having to buy more cards. I might even not buy the books if I don't need to. But having five factions, it's going to be a pain in the ass to buy like a $18 deck, $17 deck five times.
Yeah, I guess it is a much bigger deal for the multi-faction players. I mean, for myself, it's a protector deck. Probably a Merc deck because they're probably not going to come with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've actually
said that there will be a separate deck from what I remember.
Yeah.
One thing I do like, though, there are going to be a couple new models in the new faction books and the decks. So that's cool, new stuff there. I'm going to like that span of time where I won't have to buy anything and I might be able to catch up a little bit on my painting.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm kind of hitting there myself. I'm actually working really hard trying to get some stuff done for Daikon.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to actually be painting again.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Does that wrap us up for today?
I think so. Wiki, wiki, wiki.
Wiki woo.
Rap, I don't
wham,
know.
Wham, wham, wazzle.
Rap snacks, official snacks of podcasting.
I still have to send those out to Geist and the other SOBs. I found boxes for them.
I don't want to know, do I?
Huh? Wait, what?
Are the boxes weird?
No. Okay. No, they're just boxes I didn't need to ship things in.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to buy like a $4 box to send somebody $2 for the chips. So Geist and the SOBs, they're coming. I'm sorry it's taking so long. I sent them an email a while back saying they're on their way.
Are you saying you're late and getting it shipped out?
Oh, yeah.
So would that be an epoch fail?
Yeah, Dave. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.